Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Daniel Romano is a multi-talented musician, producer, songwriter, and label co-owner who currently calls Fenwick, Ontario, home. Over the past 15 years, he's made a name for himself in bands like Attack and Black and Daniel, Fred, and Julie, and also as a solo artist exploring the far reaches of folk, country, rock, and punk music. His sixth solo album is called Modern Pressure, which was just longlisted for the 2017 Polaris Music Prize in Canada, and is otherwise being lauded as Romano's finest and most mystifying album yet. It's out courtesy of You've Changed Records in Canada and New West Records elsewhere around the world, and it prompted Dan to return to this show to discuss turning off the refrigerator in his compound apartment, music appreciation and consumption, Jennifer Castle, diss tracks and his new song about the Ramones and U2, the new tape by his band Ancient Shapes, Bob Dylan's recent speech accepting his Nobel Prize for Literature, the future of his old band, Attack and Black, Modern Pressure, and much more. Sponsored by Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, this is Daniel Romano on the 324th episode of Creative Control with your host, me, Vish Khanna.
Jennifer, the mother of a song.
Hi, Dan. How's it going?
It's going well. How are you, Vish?
I'm well. I'm very well, actually. How are things? Are you... The last time you were on the show, you told me that you were at a compound in Fenwick, Ontario. Is that where you are today?
Yes. Still at the compound.
And how are things at the compound?
Chaotic today, a little bit, but good. It's a big going away prep type situation right now.
Right, you're heading out on tour soon, right?
Yeah, everybody's doing everything.
Is daily life on a compound always kind of chaotic, though? There's something about compound makes me think there's going to be chaos in your everyday life. I don't know why.
It's not always chaotic, but it's like there is a lot of time with other people. It's very communal, obviously. That in itself can seem hectic when really it's not that kind of thing.
Do you thrive in that atmosphere, that environment where things are kind of...
I think I do now. I always, when I first moved here, for a couple of weeks anyway, it was the opposite. Felt like very lonely, but like in a productive way. But yeah, I think I need like validation a lot. So when there's people around, it's...
From as many people as possible. You don't strike me as a guy who does need that. I never think of you that way. I think of you as being your own man.
Well, it's kind of like only by whoever's around. It's not like a specific set. You know, I like to share, I think is really what I'm saying.
That's true. You seem like a man who's generous of spirit. That is my impression of you. That's good. I just wonder, I'm you know, every few weeks I will think of you at the compound.
Yeah.
And I just imagine what you're doing. I just imagine what it's like to live on a compound. Because I have roommates now.
Yeah.
My children. And
right.
They're not great roommates.
Of course.
And my house is small, so it kind of feels like, I feel like I can almost relate to what you're saying about this notion of being surrounded by people, but also feeling a little alienated.
Yeah. Do you have like a Vish room?
But not the Vish room is also the laundry room and
my room's kind of the kitchen. Well, actually, this is an interesting thing because my front of house guy / friend Kenny Meehan, he lives upstairs, and usually when there's extra people around, my space is the hangout space, but I guess specifically Americans come here, it's like everyone flocks to the second floor. So it's, I don't know what that's all about, but Kenny's apartment has become the go-to hangout space. Oh yeah. I got rid of my, I turned my fridge. I unplugged my fridge 'cause I don't use it. And I don't have any I got rid of my couches. So the only places to sit in my house now are two benches that I got from the bowling alley that aren't very comfortable.
I see. So it's not the most welcoming place, your space.
I guess, yeah. I wonder if I did that on purpose without realizing.
It sounds like you may have. Was it a common fridge that you turned off?
No, just mine.
You had your own fridge?
Yeah, oh yeah. My apartment's large and has, like, I mean, this, my workspace is also the kitchen.
Oh, I see. Okay.
For now. And I don't really use the fridge.
Don't you need a fridge to live with the food and the
No, I don't really I don't really do the food thing.
What do you don't eat?
Oh, I eat. I just don't make it.
You don't make it. Where do you get food?
Restaurants.
You just go to restaurants and eat the food there? Okay. I like... this might be a thing that exemplifies your age, maybe, because I used to be not a cooker on some level, and then now I just like... I really enjoy... Dan, you know what's going to happen? Because I know you a little bit.
Yeah.
You're going to get into cooking.
Do you think so?
You're going to get into cooking, and you're going to be so into it. Because a lot of what you do with your work and your music is you're adding elements and you're trying different things and you're sending it out into the world, right? And people now judge everything you say and do, and they're like, oh, it's not what's happening. It's not like the last time. That's kind of what cooking is. Cooking is a lot of like, I don't, you know, you might have an idea of what you're going to do, But the same meal can be different every time. If you can improve it, you can refine it. You can go nuts one day and just try a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Cooking is really. I bet if you got into cooking, I think you'd like it, and B, I bet you'd be good at it.
I just don't find. I find eating to be quite an inconvenience at this point in my life. I hope that it's not always the case, but right now, it's kind of this thing that's in the way of whatever I'm doing.
See, I don't feel that way about eating. I feel that way about sleeping. I find sleeping to be a huge
sleeping's annoying too. Yeah, I was thinking about that last night as I was going to bed, and I had done working with this girl Caitlin Rose right now, and I did like her whole the instrumentation to her entire record yesterday, and I was feeling kind of crazy about that because that's a lot of things to do in one day.
Yeah,
and minus the drums I did the day before, and I had a Coca-Cola kind of late at night.
Yeah, that's not good.
But it doesn't, usually Coca-Cola doesn't affect me. I can just drink it whenever.
No, I can't. Again, it's your age. It's your age. I used to drink a Coke like every day.
Yeah, me too.
Now if I go past at like 4 one. P.M., I'm up. I'm up all night.
Yeah.
So my tolerance for caffeine is lowered as well.
Yeah. I had to force myself to go to sleep last night, basically.
Yeah, well, I all I'll say is to get back to it. Sleep sucks. Food is mm-hmm. good. Cooking is fun. I think
I have come around to think food is good.
Mm-hmm.
I used to just, you know, wish that I had no taste buds and didn't care and just could drink like a brown smoothie of sorts and whatever.
Uh-huh.
That would be all the things I needed for the day.
Sure.
But I do think food is good.
Okay.
Now.
But
so that's a step in the direction of maybe like wanting to make it.
Yeah, yeah. I think I honestly don't want to, you know. I just think that you would have fun with it because it's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun. It's a lot of work. It's
like,
a big mess.
I think that's like a state of sort of like relaxation that I haven't gotten to yet.
Well,
you know, where you can be like, I'm gonna make, especially I live alone, so like I'm gonna make a meal for myself. I'm mm-hmm. gonna take like. An hour, or how, I don't know how long cooking takes, but I'm going to take this period of time in my day and make food for me, you know, as opposed to going out, supporting your local economy.
You could do both. I just came home, the other day I came home and I got my kids, and then I realized my wife and I hadn't planned dinner, and so I just stared at the fridge. Like, you don't have a fridge now, but I stared at the fridge, and then I went down to the storage freezer, and then I just whipped up. This is not a boast. I just Googled. Oh. I just looked for food recipes based on the elements that I had in front of me.
Yeah.
And I made this. I'm not a great cook, but I just made this beautiful, creamy, what was it? A butter, garlic, shrimp pasta?
Okay.
And I'm not a guy who could do that normally, but I just did it with like... Yeah. Oh man, with arugula, and now I'm getting hungry. It was great. I loved it.
Arugula.
Anyway, my point here is that's me. Like, you're a guy, you just talked about this, you're a guy who plays every instrument on song sometimes. Like, that to me is a recipe. That to me is like, what the hell am I going to do? And then you're just adding, because that to me is just bizarre. I've never done that. I've never played every instrument on a song, so I'm a little baffled by it.
If that's the analogy, I feel like I always just make like a salad, the same salad over and over again.
No, I don't think so. You mentioned the drumming on the Caitlin Rose record that you did, mm-hmm. and I was listening to Modern Pressure, which I'm hoping we will talk about at some point, just for your own, just out of respect for you and the time that you've given me today. The drumming's really interesting. I was listening to your parts, and you know, I'm essentially if I'm a musician, I'm a drummer, and very fascinating. Like a lot of tom stuff and a lot of. Can you talk about that a little bit? Like your approach to the rhythm on this, the rhythmic tracks on this record. I know it sounds like it could be a boring question, but
no, it's not boring to me. It might be boring to anyone who listens to this, but
I think if they hear the record, this would be nice insight because I find the drumming really fascinating.
I don't necessarily know what I was trying to channel. I just kind of was, purposely playing, I guess, to the to the vocal in my head more so than just rhythmically, you know, like the Keith Moon approach of following the vocal.
Yeah.
which was difficult because I did drums first to like, I don't even think I laid down scratch tracks. I think I just played it with like a lyric sheet taped to the kick drum or something, you know?
Really? That's unusual for you?
No, I do that sometimes, but if I'm like nothing is like, you know, I hate the grid, nothing's gridded. So really it made no sense to do a scratch track. I was familiar enough with sort of how I wanted the songs to be, I could just kind of like hum along to it in my head while doing the drum tracks. So some of it is, following the vocal, or what I thought was going to be the vocal, that may have changed by the time the vocal actually got in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the sort of idea. I mean, whatever, the record A and B sides start with a ridiculously long drum fill.
Yeah, like an odd drum fill.
Yeah.
The beginning. Yeah, they just start, it starts weird, and you went Tom crazy. Like, just like, yeah, lots of toms.
And then it goes straight four on the floor after that.
The stringy hair all tangled like a briar. My hair was shook up by the hand, but this time they were branding from the fire.
Ooh. I don't know. That just was funny to me.
It's amusing. Like, on some level, I shouldn't say it's not distracting. It stuck out for me. Like, I was just like very enamored of your playing, and I don't want to. Again, some people are going to be really bored by this point with us just talking about the drumming, but I do, when people check out, if they haven't listened to Modern Pressure yet,
I was very focused on drums for this record.
I wanted
the drums to sound cool, and I wanted the playing to be interesting.
You invoked Keith Moon's name there. Was there anyone else? Because I have some, you know,
I would say just the two greats, Keith and Ringo.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What about the drumming on a record or a like mid-70s kind of Dylan, like Desire maybe, or the Rolling Thunder tour? Like, there's
something. Who is on? Yeah, I mean, that guy's insane.
Yeah, I can't remember
that guy's name.
I can't remember it off the top of my head.
But it's
right
kind
now.
Of like a Mitch Mitchell type thing.
It is, right? But it's just very frenetic, and it's very Tom-oriented, and you have whole sections of your songs where you're just doing these. You mentioned Ringo, and I thought, in some cases, I thought of like sped-up versions of like the Come Together beat, which is really odd.
Yeah. I also lift the Tomorrow Never Knows or whatever that song's called.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lift of that in Sucking the Old World Dry. I think the chorus is essentially that beat or some variation of that.
Yep, it's a very distinctive beat. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Anyway.
The beat ahead of its time, as they say.
It was. I think it was.
I think Ringo's a very tasty drummer.
Yeah. And there are other things, like, I don't want to just bog you down with references, because I do want to, first of all, kind of contextualize the record just by the name a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because this notion of modern pressure has been swimming around in my head a lot, because I think it has a temporal distinction as well. It suggests there was an old kind of pressure, you know, a different kind of pressure, and now there's a modern kind of pressure. Can you expand upon what you were going for there?
Oh, I don't. I've been meaning to sort of like figure out what I meant by that.
This follows a record of yours called Mosey.
Yeah.
Which I think we discussed the last time you were on. You know, Mosey has a kind of, I don't know, it sounds like a relaxed thing you would do as a person who moseys.
It's funny that anything like that would be tagged to me, because I'm very much not like that.
No, and then Modern Pressure. When I saw that was the name of this record, it did make me think of our conversation and things you've said in the press just about, just thinking about the world critically and certainly the way culture is valued And I just
I'm a victim to a very specific type of oversaturation or a decrease in value to a very specific thing that is my, I guess, way of life. And I imagine it stems from something as like sort of like selfish and boring as that. But, you know, once you think about that, what's affecting you, and realize that that thing is kind of universal, as far as like a sort of a mass decrease in quality of all things, or that kind of idea. You know, I think that's kind of the root of the whatever that theme might be.
Are you saying I'm trying to unpack what you said. You're feeling like in your prolific artistic output, you might be undervaluing yourself, and then within
I'm saying more like when art becoming free, that kind of thing.
Oh, I see.
Which is a very confusing thing. It's a confusing time for that to be. Because, you know, you have to sort of juggle what the meaning is now. What is the purpose of it? You know, not that the purpose is monetary, but that is what sustains it. You know, people don't have patrons anymore. I know a few that do, but mostly we don't have patrons. Beyond the general public, who do not want or don't see the point in purchasing anything that is made, which may actually be the root of why I make things so quickly and in mass quantity, is maybe just to... No, I don't know. I don't know. It's a funny thing.
But you are speaking to contemporary experience and how it's distinct from the way things used to be.
Yeah, I just don't think that people enjoy music anymore.
So when you say
I think people like the idea of liking music,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think that people as a whole need it.
Do you think that it's been supplanted by other things, or do you just feel like that's just because of the way it's been? We are conditioned to spend $2,000 or $3,000 on a computer, and $1,000 on a phone, without you know thinking about it, and $200 for the data for the
phone.
Yeah,
I mean, I should retract some of what I said. I think people do need music. I just think people don't know how to enjoy it.
But how does that manifest itself?
I don't think people are getting the full experience of what it is anymore, and maybe don't even have the inherent desire to, you know.
But how does that manifest itself exactly? Like when you say that people, that's a huge statement to make.
Well, actually, Kay is a good example. She kind of had a not as culturally diverse upbringing, you could say, or something mm-hmm. like that, right? So she has not been exposed to a lot of the things that, say, you and I as, like, music nerds have.
Yeah.
And so I can like, kind of have these experiences again through her, you know, because she'll hear something that... we've heard a million times or whatever, and have kind of done this same thing to, you know, kind of just like, yes, that's fine. We don't need to hear that song, you know? And she'll be like so heavily moved by it, you know,
for the first time, like hearing it for the first time.
I think that she's one of the people I know that really experiences music, you know, to the point. And this is like, and that's another reason I make records so quickly, is so that I don't remember them, so that I can enjoy them from like a fan's perspective, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just fun for me. Like when I do the Ancient Shape stuff, it's like 2 days, whole record. I don't know what it is. You take a step back for maybe a day and then you listen to it. And it's like this record that just exists that I don't necessarily relate to it in an immediate kind of way.
Yeah.
and so I can like it without, you know, I don't critique anything I do anymore. That's kind of where I'm trying to get to, where I'm just like, that exists, that came from me, but I don't necessarily relate to it on like on a personal level. I relate to it as a lover of music.
Can you actually just back up and explain who Kay is for people who don't know who?
Kay is the woman who does everything in my life, and she is now the organist and singer in the band. She's played virtually every instrument in the band, but now she's on organ, which is her dominant instrument. Well, piano is her dominant instrument, and so she's one of those people that can pick up anything and be extremely good at it within, you know, 45 minutes.
Right. Okay. So this is fascinating to me, and I'm trying to figure out how all of this stuff informs your kind of aesthetic these days in particular, because I think we made some allusions to things that I've heard popping up on the record in terms of influence. You've mentioned a few people as well.
I was really only listening to the Incredible String Band at the time. I tried to only listen to that.
Why is that?
Which it didn't really, you know, that didn't really translate so much. Just because I think that they're like, other than Jennifer Castle, they're kind of like the freest performers that have existed, in my opinion.
Right.
You know?
Right. So it was important for you to feel inspired?
Free is the wrong word. Freedom, whatever. I just think, let's say musically unhinged.
Okay. And that's something that frenetic quality informs this record, for sure.
It has much more to do with, it's so much less physical. It's more of like this ethereal kind of like magical thing, as opposed to this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's hard to explain. You know the String Band?
Yeah, I know them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what I like about them. They don't think about like, oh, what's the harmony for this part? Or what are the chords? You know, it's like, it doesn't matter. Whatever they are, it's fine. You know?
Right. And there's a certain...
I think that element of music is long missing. It doesn't really exist in music that much anymore, other than Jennifer. Jennifer does it.
Jennifer is able to tap into that sense of music can be anything.
Yeah, and I know you know her.
Yeah,
she's a very special and spiritual presence. And that, you know, she's one of those people where her music directly embodies her personality. You know.
And her outlook, really.
And her outlook, yes.
Yeah. You've got at least two songs that are, I believe, explicitly about women on the record, Roya and Jennifer Castle. You've called the song Jennifer Castle after the musician Jennifer Castle.
Yeah.
These are tributes to these people.
Yes.
And like I say, I imagine there are other tributes to people somewhere throughout the record. But why did you want to do this? I mean, this notion of writing someone a song.
I mean, they're not love songs, you know, like these aren't like your typical like relationship kind of love songs. These are odes, I guess you could call them.
Well, you have a complicated relationship with love songs. You invoke the notion of love songs and what they mean.
Yeah, that's true.
On the record, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Ever been growing continues to grow. In the world that you led when you needed to go. The wind blows the trees as it rains from above. Tell me what's to become of the meaning of love. Paper still comes in a quarter to four. And the rust in the hinges still seizes the door. And what's to be done on the wide winged doors? Tell me what's to become of the meaning of love. I see in the memory of you. Tell me what's to become.
So it's interesting that your point of you immediately wanted to clarify that you hadn't written these two people love songs per se.
Yeah, in the traditional sense. Yeah.
Right. But they are odes. They are. They're almost like a. They're not an homage necessarily, but they are like
more of a celebration or something like that.
Yeah. What? And you've talked about Jennifer a bit. Who is Roya?
Roya is the woman in Sweden who housed me and Kenny when we were there for over a month, just living in her cabin. And you
made this record in the cabin, right? In Sweden.
Yeah. And she is one of the most genuinely caring individuals. You know, like one of those people that will just do anything for anyone else, just because she's wonderful. And having that like secluded experience of that. Was just at times overwhelming. We showed up and we were like, hey, yeah, you know, we didn't know where we were going to go, basically.
Yeah.
Because we had a bunch of time between tours to do whatever. And she was like, you can stay as long as you want. You know, the offer still stands. If I was there right now, I'm sure she wouldn't even be irritated about it, which is insane to me. So she opened up her home to us for an indefinite period of time. And so we got there and we were like, we want to make a record in here, since we'll be here or whatever. And within definitely inside of an hour, she had sourced everything that we had written down that we needed.
Wow.
Yeah. From just friends in town. And we did the rounds in our little Peugeot and picked everything up, and it was crazy. She would just show up with dinner, you know, like almost every night. This one, like, you know.
So on some level, the least you can do for someone when they're that generous to you is write them a song. I imagine it must be overwhelming for someone to realize that they are the recipient of a song, a nominal recipient of their song. Like, you named songs after people. What was the, have you talked to them about their reactions to these songs?
No, it makes me nervous to do that. I mean, I've talked to Jennifer about it because she talked to me about it.
Is that the ultimate gift, do you think, for an artist to do something like this?
It's really the only one that I know how to make.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That okay. isn't like physical goods. You know, like...
Sure. Lasts longer than a bottle of wine, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, these two songs...
Like Jennifer said, like, thank you for immortalizing me in song. Which, you know, I mean, she's the immortal one to me. I don't...
She's immortalized herself. She's made records. Yeah. No, I think it's a loving... I know you hedged a little about the love song thing. But you also have a song called What's to Become of the Meaning of Love. Something about love... and passion. I mean, you mentioned that people don't appreciate music the way maybe they should.
I have no beef with those people either. That's just we're subject to a time. I don't blame anyone for not caring.
I appreciate that, but I think there's something really telling about your homing in on that notion of conviction and love.
I have to touch on it because it's my job. You know. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, it's going to creep into what I'm, you know, when I'm making something that stems from just pure thought, like that thought is going to be in there because it's not only what I'm thinking, but it's also directly, it has directly to do with what I'm making.
Yeah, that's fair. But I wonder if... I don't think you're behaving indifferently to what's going on in the culture. I think you're reacting to it. When you talk about trying to contemplate why you make stuff as much as you do and as fast as you do, that's how we consume now. Like, that's, even though you're not trying to give those people
but
doing
the
so
thing
credence,
is,
but that's what...
I agree with that. I think the issue is the industry in which this thing exists is not has not adapted to that. That's my that would be my personal biggest frustration, is that I don't think that more output necessarily means saturation. I think more output feeds a desire, you know.
Yeah.
The systematic record cycle is dated.
Right. You say it feeds desire, but I think it also fulfills an expectation that there will be content.
Yeah.
Well, like, and some
people can do it still. You know what I mean? Like, there are certain platforms and certain artists that have basically you can project what's to be expected of you, but if you're in a systematic stronghold that doesn't allow your output to be as ample as you want it to be, then you end up with your shelves full, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. and that can be frustrating, because I only relate to what is being made for a certain period of time, and then I just don't want it to exist anymore. So,
of your own.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of things just don't see the light of day because of that. And I find that to be frustrating, because I'm not projecting the current version of what I want to be projecting at all times, you know what I mean?
It does feel like you're someone who's fighting time and the times a little bit.
I don't want to be that person. I'm modernized, you know.
No, I don't think you're I'm not like cut off from the times.
I'm not a nostalgic person, I don't think. I mean, I listen to specific types of music, and I'm influenced by specific types of music, but I don't think of that as nostalgia. I think everybody is now. I mean, if you consider, you know, I think we've touched on this before, but, you know, nothing, there has been no definitive new movement since like the mid 80s or early 80s. So everyone's aping something like that. You know, everyone's channeling some kind of thing that has its birthrights in like the, whatever, mid last century.
Yeah, different times. You're plugging into, we talked about this, it's sort of an amorphous, everything's kind of like a glob, a temporal glob.
Yeah, and either you're, you know, interested enough to know its source, or you're not, and that's the only difference. It's all coming from this one period of time.
Yeah, that's fair. Speaking of which, you pay some tribute to the Ramones,
yes,
in a new video that was just released, and also for the song "The Pride of Queens." You mm-hmm. we've talked about your odes to Roya and Jennifer Castle. There's a lot I think are more pointed elements to this record as well. There seem to be specific and non-specific diss tracks, if you will. And "The Pride of Queens" is the one that stuck out to me the second I heard it, because on the one hand you are paying loving tribute to the Ramones, and this, but correct me if I'm wrong here, by the way, on the other hand it seems to me that you're directly confronting the band U2 and their attempt to pay tribute to the Ramones with their song "The Miracle of Joey Ramone."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please explain this to me, because I find it very interesting.
Well, I was slightly offended by that whole situation that happened and that we were all a victim to.
by the Irish quartet U2.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When they inserted their record, Songs of Innocence, onto all of our, anyone who had an Apple product at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And now, and see, again, because of how record cycles work, that's a very dated thing to be upset about.
But, this was a few years ago, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote it directly when it happened. But yeah, I just like, you know, there's those people that just ruin documentaries. Do you know what I mean?
Right, a documentary is going just fine, and then
yeah,
like, oh,
like
I wish they'd stop cutting.
Steve Earle is one.
Sure, yeah.
David Fricke from Rolling Stone. And Bono. They
right,
all seem to be in every single documentary about anything that's culturally relevant. And why are they there?
Yeah.
I mean, David Fricke, I understand why he's there. He's just in a lot of them, so I had to say his name. He does not upset me at all. You know, he's quite a presence.
Right.
But I don't know. I have my doubts. Do you know what I mean? And that's what the song's about. I have my doubts.
You have your doubts about
whether...
It is
not based in any sort of reality, necessarily. I didn't fact check anything. I just said how I felt, you know?
I'm with you on it. I found that if you just forget the fact that they...
Like, here's the thing. Ronnie Drew, he's dying of cancer.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Bono's there. He's not in any of the other... You know what I mean? He's there when Ronnie's on his deathbed. Basically, it just feels like, and it doesn't matter if it's true because it's a song, who cares? But it just feels like opportunistic actions to me.
This is a band that, but at the same time, I don't know.
He's very charitable, right?
Well, there's that.
It's a questionable thing to, you know, this is not a dig on his
there's that
whatever,
aspect of
millions
it
millions of dollars he gives to to AIDS awareness or whatever he does. I know he does lots of things. He's
sure
probably,
no, I understand
he's
this
he's technically a great guy.
Yeah, I understand the suspicion, because but at the same time, and I'm not defending anything, at the same time, some people who have gone to see U2 have seen PJ Harvey, they've seen Kanye West, they've seen Primus, you know, or whoever, and there seem to be, I mean, on their current tour you can see the Mumford and Sons or whoever else, I can't remember. So but there was a point where, or the Pixies, I remember the last Pixies tour I think was opening up for U2, maybe that destroyed them, I have no idea. But there's a point where they seem, yes, potentially opportunistic, there's a point where they seem plugged in as well.
Yeah.
Like they know they have a mainstream big audience and they're trying to challenge them with an interesting opening act or whatever. Maybe. I don't know what their motivations are. Maybe it just makes them look cool.
It seems like hyperactive capitalist behavior to me. Not like how the Rolling Stones might do the same thing. The Rolling Stones do the same thing with with tact, I think.
Hmm.
The Rolling Stones are, I come across, they're the way they project their sort of like hyping contemporaries is more of a, it seems like, it feels like a genuine love, you know, of like, whatever. I just like, I believe them. That's the difference. Mm. I couldn't tell you why, mm-hmm. but when the Rolling Stones attach themselves to a modern thing in order to sustain themselves, really is what's happening. I believe that whom they chose, or I just think that they thought about it, and not in a way like, not only because of like, this is cool, this will make people still think we're cool. Right. I think it's, there's more to it than that. And I think with U2, it's not the case.
I feel like they've given up trying to be cool, finally.
I hope they have, because they've never been cool, and they're a terrible band. No one should like them.
But you do love the Ramones.
I do love the Ramones.
You mentioned Ancient Shapes earlier, when I first heard the first Ancient Shapes record. By the way, this silent rave tape that you made is great.
Oh, you have one?
I have a copy of the tape now, yeah.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's great. Giant Comma, is that the song?
Yeah.
Giant Comma. That's just a, yeah. That is just a funny
yeah.
turn of phrase and image.
With Ancient Shapes, I basically just write funny things down and then make songs out of them. But
it's quite a chorus.
Yeah, I forget what that song's about, but it made sense when I wrote it.
There's a Ramones. If there's Ramones in your work, it seems to come through in Ancient
yeah,
Shapes.
Yeah, Ancient Shapes is basically just the Ramones and the Buzzcocks.
Right, right. That's just an element that you, or rather a... something you value that you want to put forth. And
yeah,
I mean,
it's a kind of spirit you can't put into everything all the time. You know, usually when I do the drum tracks to an Ancient Shapes record, which is like how the record is made, it comes from just like after a session with somebody else, you know, and the drums are still set up or whatever. It's just like a quick, you know, maybe it wasn't the funnest thing to do, or whatever, and then these drums are set up, bash out 30 minutes of whatever drumming,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then just make songs over top of it really quickly.
Okay, so it has a kind of like, it's an immediate, the songs and the records have an immediate quality in Ancient Shapes. I guess that's where that comes from.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, that all, the origin of even doing that comes from everything we've already talked about.
Yeah.
Just wanting to... I think having another outlet is one way of dealing with the situation I'm whining about.
Right, right. Well, this song, "The Pride of Queens," and there's a few other pointed references on your Daniel Romano record, "Modern Pressure," and I couldn't help but think of similar kinds of diss tracks. Do you mind me invoking the phrase "diss track"?
Love it.
I was thinking of John Lennon's "How Do You Sleep" a lot.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of George Harrison's kind of pointed songs.
That one's crazy.
Which
if
one?
How Do You Sleep? If yeah. I could ever write a song as violent as that, it would be amazing. I'm sure I could. I'm too scared to, though.
Is that 70s period of Lennon and Harrison? Because you mentioned Ringo. Let's just talk about the Beatles. no, is that okay. period significant for you?
Yeah, big time.
Because I hear shades of it. I was trying to figure it all out. And where, because I like to figure out where I when you mentioned the string band, I did not.
Well, that's
that.
The thing, right? I kind of left Lennon out of that, but he definitely had that quality too,
mm-hmm.
of just anything goes, say what you feel. Those are the only parameters.
And go after people, like call people out.
Yeah.
I mean, he's called so many people out, or he used to call so many people out, and just because he had the power to do it. And it seems like you're calling out a culture. You're calling out a culture, but you're also calling out a people. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, that's I guess what I'm doing.
The songs that you write as Daniel Romano.
I'm just trying to see what I can get away with. I'm gauging what I can get away with.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I gather that. I gather that quite, and it's, you're getting away with quite a lot, if I might say. I mean, the songs are fantastic. There's sitar on this record. You're doing this interstitial thing that you did on the last two records. I can't remember where
it always ends up happening.
Yeah. You'll have a song and it seems to be done. And then there's just a thing, a tag.
Yeah.
Where you're still doing this.
Yeah. My only regret is that people seem to think that, the fake love songs track is an extended thought on the Jennifer Castle song, which it is not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a separate entity.
It's similar in theme, but also I didn't write that. That was from a hardcore band from Welland called Keep It Up, those lyrics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw that in the liners. Yeah.
But it was fitting, and I liked, okay, so my old band made a cassette called Fake Love Songs. I think even then was in tribute to the Keep It Up song, Fake Love Songs. We didn't really touch on the theme. We just stole the title. But there is a track on that the melody is from for this song,
mm-hmm.
which was called Constellations. And which I liked, and that tape didn't, we only made very few of them, so they didn't really circulate very much, and not many people are familiar with it. So I wanted to sort of bring that back because I liked the melody.
I'm not in considering, I know everyone's got problems, heartache is a part of life. But when is it gonna start? Fake love songs. Yes, and you're all pushing the same trash, and I just don't believe it. Cause there's a lack of sincerity in the words you try to write. Yes, you're cheapening the sentiments that you're trying to make until they're just another.
It's interesting, like you in the conversation you were kind of not necessarily, bear with me here, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so correct me if I'm wrong, like you're kind of calling out the way music is accepted and received and consumed, but in the record you're also calling out the people who make the music as being maybe not up to snuff all the time.
To a degree. I thought this was kind of a love-in as of a record, you know. I was trying to only project positivity, even if it was through pessimism.
Yeah, so, you know, sucking the old world dry, the songs about people making basically plastic music, fake music.
Yeah.
I tried to hold the world in my mouth. I mean, these seem to be...
I couldn't tell you what that's about.
I was trying to figure that one out myself. My son and I
tried
to figure that one out.
I'm sure it made sense. It probably made sense at the time.
I tried to hold the world in my mouth. I tried to swallow a mountain, spread my tongue like a wing. And I was spread beside you on a bed of down. I tried to make your oxygen fever body sing. I tried to hold the world in my mouth. I tried to hold.
But it does speak to, again, this is just my interpretation, like a song like that one speaks to control, feeling out of control.
You know what? I was really liberated recently, and I'm sure you've listened to this, but the new Dylan speech that has surfaced.
Yeah, my God, I was listening to it yesterday, yeah.
Right?
So what does it all mean? Myself and a lot of other songwriters have been influenced by these very same themes. And they can mean a lot of different things. If a song moves you, that's all that's important. I don't have to know what a song means. I've written all kinds of things into my songs, and I'm not going to worry about it, what it all means. when Melville put all his Old Testament biblical references, scientific theories, Protestant doctrines, and all that knowledge of the sea and sailing ships and whales into one story, I don't think he would have worried about it either, what it all means. John Donne as well, the poet priest who lived in the time of Shakespeare, wrote these words, "The sestos and abidos of her breasts, not of two lovers, but two loves, the nests." I don't know what it means either, but it sounds good, and you want your songs to sound good. When Odysseus in the Odyssey visits the famed warrior Achilles in the underworld, Achilles, who traded a long life full of peace and contentment for a short one full of honor and glory, tells Odysseus, "There was all a mistake. I just died, that's all. There was no honor, no immortality. And that if he could, he would choose to go back and be a lowly slave to a tenant farmer on earth rather than be what he is, a king in the land of the dead. That whatever his struggles of life were, they were preferable to being here in this dead place." And that's what songs are too. Our songs are alive in the land of the living. But songs are unlike literature. They're meant to be sung, not read. The words in Shakespeare's plays were meant to be acted on the stage, just as lyrics and songs are meant to be sung, not read on a page. And I hope some of you get the chance to listen to these lyrics the way they were intended to be heard, in concert or on record, or however people are listening to songs these days. I return once again to Homer, who says, "Sing in me, O muse, and through me tell the story."
You know, I've always felt a certain way about... Well, music is for everyone, obviously, we know this. And it no longer belongs to the author as soon as it's conceived. And it can be interpreted in many different ways. It's, you know, arguably the ultimate language. And, you know, there's this desire to say something specific that does not need to be necessarily. And I've always thought that, and I've always kind of like done that. But, you know, to hear someone who ultimately changed music for the better in an era, say something like, "The words don't have to mean something; they just have to sound good."
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That is how I've always approached it. You know, it's going to mean different things to different people, and most oftentimes, it meant something to me. But that's why I find being questioned about particular songs difficult, because I have no, like, I feel like I shouldn't have to represent modern pressure. I shouldn't have to have this, like, I don't have a manifesto that is modern pressure. I don't have this, like, long, you know, explanation of what I was trying to say or what as a whole it represents. I hope that it feels like a cohesive album,
mm-hmm.
and I hope that it says something to anyone, but I don't know what that is, and I don't necessarily know what I'm saying.
Well, it's fascinating to hear you talk about it this way, because I've had two conversations with people who are fans of yours recently and who've heard the record, and we kind of landed on this notion that it was your best record, that it was your strongest record.
I agree. That's,
well, you have
that's
to agree.
Available you're to the public.
You're promoting the record. Oh, that's available to the public. You're sitting on something, at least
I'm
one
always,
thing.
You know, I'm always sitting on something.
Well, it's a fantastic, overwhelming record, and it's given me a. I don't know if I've put this across properly in the course of our conversation, but it's given me a lot to think about. And that's all I can really hope for from it.
And that's all that I could hope for.
Yeah. Yeah. It's made me ponder you and...
I mean, these are genuine thoughts. Like, these are, yeah. You know, I'm not writing nonsense. I just think that it becomes more ethereal once it's finished. Mm-hmm. Once it's out of my hands, then I don't know. You know what I mean? Because I think it's dangerous for me to listen to and try to, you know, pinpoint things from. I mean, I'm performing them all the time, but that's, it's really more of an environment type thing than
yeah.
than a literal projection of verse. It's the whole thing altogether, and really I'm having fun performing music. That's what I'm thinking about, you know.
You're not processing, you're performing.
No, because I already wrote the words, so now I'm just singing them.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
a different thing.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean,
yeah,
so
not to retract what I said before, but there is theme and there is meaning to what is written, but it is ever changing and not very specific.
That's fair. I mean, yeah. I'm not.
What was your conversation with your friend? What was the debate?
There wasn't a debate. It was an agreement. It was okay. actually a full on, like, this record, two friends, by the way, two different people. It was just that sort of, we came to an understanding that this felt like your strongest record. And then I'm seeing people on social media say, this is the best record I've heard all year, you know, like other people. So I'm chiming in to be like, it's ridiculously great. So I'm hoping that people dig into it and listen to it and maybe get whatever I'm still getting out of it. Cause I think it's, I'm not just ending this to flatter you. There's a lot going on.
No,
here.
I agree. I feel that it's my best to date.
Yeah. And I do appreciate,
but I feel that way about anything that's the newest thing I've done.
Of course.
You know,
of course.
But I think that musically it's probably an amalgamation of anything, of everything I've ever done.
Yes, it truly is. And I've kind of clumsily invoked some people that come to mind when I hear it. But I think the people I've invoked are all pretty amazing. And I'm hearing, and I know that you're fans of many of them, or I'm finding out that you're fans of many of them. And I hear all of it coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, I think they're all uncompromising people who want to put something interesting across, something provocative across. And it's a provocative album. So I'm just saying good work. Good work. All of this to say, good work, Dan. You've done another great thing. What's coming up next for you?
Heavy touring.
Yeah. Is that good? Yeah. Do you like that?
I do, yeah. I mean, I've always... Okay, so my approach to assembling a band is probably different than a lot of people's, which is I don't... It's really not so much about ability... It's more about personality.
Right.
You know? And whatever. Music's not hard. You'll figure it out. Like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
My songs aren't, you know, complicated once you know them.
I don't envy the drummer.
Well, it's my brother and he's the greatest drummer in the world.
No, so it's true. But yeah. But that's the other weird thing. Like, why do you do everything yourself? You got a drummer. Does your brother?
Because I don't know the songs before I record
them.
Oh,
okay. Okay. Right.
The only reason. My brother's way better at drums than me.
Well, does he ever hear it and be like, that's not how the drums work?
Yeah. I think he has a respect for my drumming as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I know technically him and Kay are the best instrumentalists in the band.
Really? Wow.
You're
selling yourself short, I think.
Technically proficient. Well, I'm not that good. I'm like a hack of all trades.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Sure. I don't think that's true, but
how I see it. Like, I can get the job done. That's basically how I feel about what, like, my musical ability.
Right.
And I like, I shy of bass guitar, I feel like I'm a good bass player.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You feel like you're the strongest on the bass?
Well, Roddy's a good bass player. But I think I might be better than him.
So did you want to finish that thought? Like, you were saying you don't put a band together like most people.
Oh yeah, it's like farm team mentality, you know.
Mm.
Because personality is the aura and spirit of a person, I think, is more important than their proficiency on an instrument.
Sure.
For instance, so Kay has moved to Oregon, which in essence is her sort of root instrument. You know, she is a she grew up.
Oh, you
playing
said sorry,
piano.
Oregon. It sounded like you said Kay has moved to Oregon.
I know everyone this, thinks I say that. I'm saying
it did.
That.
It
no,
did
Kay
totally.
Has moved
I thought you were like, oh, Kay.
Fenwick.
If you hadn't finished that, Oregon. I was like, she relocated to the state of
yeah,
Oregon
to find herself.
Right.
She moved to Oregon to find herself.
Right.
No, she has moved to playing the organ.
Okay.
And trumpet. And also one of her root instruments. And she's a great guitar player. But the magic thing about Kay is that she, because of how she had been sort of removed from any of the whatever typical kind of rock and roll things that you, that some people have access to in their younger ages is a really magical thing, because she does not approach any instrument in any sort of traditional rock and roll type of way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can hear her play the organ, and of course the organ has a very specific sound and it does a specific thing, but she also plays it that has no nod to anything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like this, like, I've never heard an organ played like that before, you know? And that kind of thing comes from that type of innocence. And the only other way to get, I mean, Kay's a special case, right? Where she can do all these things and references nothing while doing them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, there's no like run that's like, okay, I'm going to do like a Garth Hudson type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right here or whatever. It's like, I'm just going to play melodically on this organ. And that's like the end of the thought. So it's this special thing that is very original in its innocence. And the only other way to achieve that is to get people together who aren't necessarily very good at playing music, but are wonderful people.
Right. No, that makes sense. That's interesting. And it sounds like you lucked out, because the...
Well, my brother's really good at drums.
Yeah.
But he's
yeah,
also... Yeah. He's gone through so many phases of, like... I remember, like, in our old... My old band with him, there was a period of time where he stopped playing well on purpose, because he was going through this phase of learning rudiments and focusing on jazz things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very frustrating, because we were in the middle of a tour and he just decides that he has no idea how to play drums properly and had to start from scratch. And it was a disaster.
Oh, man.
But ultimately, this fed this beast. You know, he's essentially, he's unhinged now.
Yeah, yeah.
Entirely
an
unhinged.
Yeah.
I don't know what, if anything, that he's channeling now, but he has assembled himself quite a drum kit.
That, yeah, I noticed that. I saw a photo.
He's got two floor toms, two rack toms. Yeah, you can't miss kind of drum kit.
Yeah.
And I think he's liberated himself with the excess of physical drums.
It's sometimes easier to play a 5 or 6 piece kit than it is a 3 piece kit. It's
yeah.
weird, like, because you don't have to, you just hit something. It's
just
there.
Throw your arms and it's probably going to sound good.
It's going to hit something. Yeah,
yeah.
That's weird. Speaking of your brother, Ian, I noticed something weird. Maybe you can speak to this. There seemed to be a lot more activity on the Attack in Black Facebook page recently.
Really?
Yeah, just like new photos were being added on a weekly basis there for a while. And everyone was like, what the hell? Like, are you guys getting back together? What is happening? Like, the comments are all basically that. Because there just seemed to be a regular... It was happening with greater... I haven't checked in a while. They would just show up in my feed. I'm like, why did they update their, you know, banner image? And why are they updating new photos regularly all of a sudden? Do you have any insight there? You are a member of the band Attack
and... I can't speak to that.
No?
I'm not sure, no.
Would you want to reconvene Attack and Light at any point?
If everyone knocked on the door at the same time, I would think about it. As long as it was an entirely new endeavor and not like a greatest hits tour, or something, I would, I mean, I love all of those people.
Yeah.
And I would play music with them again. But, everyone is in such a different place now that I can't see it. I can see it happening, but I can't see it happening in a way where anyone would be satisfied other than the band.
So you're not privy to these decisions to like kind of keep the Facebook page active? Is that Ian?
It's probably Ian, yeah. I think it's because he's been working on archival type things.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So yeah, it's most likely that.
Okay. Okay. I just occurred to me as you were talking about it.
I mean, there is a record that never came out, and I wouldn't be upset if it was released, but I don't know in what capacity
Those songs were amazing. Like the last time I saw you.
I really liked that album.
Well, you should put it out. Damn it.
I agree. Well, I'm sure it'll come out eventually.
Okay. Anyway, I didn't mean to dredge up Attack in Black necessarily, but like
fine.
I say, it seemed like something was going on there.
Yeah.
That's all.
Maybe it is. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, you should know. You should maybe have a meeting with your brother. Is there a song from Modern Pressure that we can go out on right now? Oh, but first, before that, where can people get more info about you on the computer? Is it DanielRomano.com or something?
DanielRomanoMusic.com.
DanielRomanoMusic.com for the latest updates and...
Is my worldwide web address, yes. And
and the record's out on New West in the States, and you've changed
New
here?
West and you've changed, yeah.
Okay, okay. So you've changed records, New West records mm-hmm. for Modern Pressure information. Yeah, is there a song we can go out on here?
What do you think?
Well, I think there is. I would like to go out on a song, but I want you to pick it.
You want me to choose it?
My son is very into Impossible Green.
Yeah, that's a good one. That one's good.
I don't know why he fixates on that one. I'm sorry, no offense. It's a great song. I'm just looking at the track list in front of me, and I'm like, oh yeah, he loves Impossible Green. Is there anything you want to say about that song if we go out on that one?
No.
Not one single thing.
I like it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good enough for me. Let's just play. This is Impossible Green from Modern Pressure by Daniel Romano. Dan, yes. Thank you so much for being back on the show, and I wish you the best of luck with everything.
My pleasure. Thank you.
In reckless moments, something went from being born to being spent. And words that came had soon been sent to watch beyond the grasses. A yellow blush of gaping sky had opened all the calloused eyes to study it and realize the glare behind the lashes. Feel the air, if bending in a woman's care, with emerald eyes and golden hair, new lips for every morning. A realm somewhere beyond the sphere is making future children fear the thought of ever coming here as a witness to the murder. Thank you. is still the trampled faith the angels whipped. The only vision that was lit is in the corner laughing.
From the excellent new record, Modern Pressure, which is just nominated now for the 2017 Polaris Music Prize. It's on the long list there. That was Daniel Romano with a song called Impossible Green, as sort of chosen by my son, who loves that song. My daughter, by the way, loves I Tried to Hold the World in My Mouth. She and I sing that on our way to and from daycare frequently. It's a great song, great record, great for kids and adults of all ages. Modern Pressure by Daniel Romano. Thank you, Dan, for being back on the show and for being thoughtful and outspoken, as always. I appreciate our conversations whenever we get to have them. This is the 324th episode of the Creative Control Podcast, which is available on iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, and many other podcast platforms. For more information about the show and to download or access every single episode up to this point, visit my website, vishkana.com. Also, you can visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to the program. And for your trouble and for your generosity, I do have some t-shirts for sale. So if you'd like one, just drop me a line and I'll get you one, okay? That's how it'll work. The show is also on Facebook. Like us on Facebook. We're on Twitter at Vish Creative. You can also follow me at Vish Khanna. And a version of this program airs every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time. Around the world at CFRU.ca, or if you're in the area in Guelph, Kitchener, Waterloo, Cambridge, we've discovered as far as Arthur, Ontario, even maybe, go to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. 93.3 FM on your radio dial to listen to this fine, fine station. This episode would not be possible without our sponsors, the finest pizzeria in Guelph, Pizza Trocadero, whom you can call for pickup or delivery at 519-829-2444, or check them out at TrocaderoGuelph.ca. The Bookshelf, an independently owned bookstore, bar, music venue, movie theater, and much more, located at 41 Quebec Street in Guelph. Learn more about them at bookshelf.ca. And for some excellent, excellent coffee, try Planet Bean freshly roasted, fair trade, certified organic coffee. There are cafes in Guelph, but they also distribute their coffee beans throughout Ontario, and I think even beyond that. Check out planetbeancoffee.com for more information. Well, that's it for this show and this episode. Thanks for listening. Check out all the other shows. As I mentioned, you can find them on my website or on all the podcast platforms. It is very helpful if you can rate, review, and download and subscribe to the show in some way. Wherever you're listening to it, if there's a thing to click on the ratings, just do that. It seems to help, and I would appreciate it. Also, I just started a YouTube page for the Long Night with Vish Khanna TV show. So I posted two episodes of that actually filmed TV show. So find it on YouTube. There's a Long Night with Vish Khanna YouTube channel. So go check that out. All right. Like I say, that's it for me. I will talk to you very soon. Goodbye for now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.